Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
Black holes, the cosmos, space and time travel, science and technology. Brought to you by theoretical physicist, futurist, popularizer of science, and world-renowned author, Professor Michio Kaku.
At GCNLive.com.
This is Science Fantastic.
Welcome back to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. Every week on Science Fantastic, we profile some of the most amazing developments in science and technology. And today we're very privileged to have with us Dr. Robert Zubrin, president and founder of the Mars Society. And we are celebrating the 25th anniversary edition of his prophetic book, The Case for Mars, the plan to settle the red planet and why we must. You know, 25 years ago, he was like a voice in the wilderness, but now he has the ear, not just of astronauts, but presidents, science advisors, industry, because Mars is in our sights. So we'll have an interview with Dr. Robert Zubrin in a minute. But first of all, let me make a short announcement. And that is, starting next week, I'll be on a national book tour. I have a new book coming out next week. It's called The God Equation, The Quest for the Theory of Everything. And it's about what I do for a living. I work on something called string theory, which some physicists believe is the theory of everything, the equation that eluded Einstein for the last 30 years of his life, an equation perhaps no more than 1 inch long that will allow us to, quote, read the mind of God. And these are the words of Albert Einstein. You know, all of biology can be summarized using the laws of chemistry. All the laws of chemistry, in turn, can be summarized by invoking the laws of physics. All of physics, in turn, can be combined into two theories: the quantum theory, the theory of the very small, like atoms, and the theory of the big, relativity. But these two theories do not like each other. The greatest minds of the century have tried to put their brain power together to meld these two theories into a unified field theory and have failed. Until recently. And this quest is not new at all. It goes back 2,000 years. 2,000 years ago, there were two competing philosophies as to the theory of everything. One was put forth by Democritus, who said that atoms are the basis for reality. A means cannot. Tum means cut. Atom means cannot cut. However, there was also Pythagoras, the famous Pythagorean theorem, and he said no. No, the theory of everything is music. Because he was looking at a lyre string, and he realized that the longer the string, the lower the note. And then he was looking at a blacksmith shop, and he saw that the larger the rod of steel, the lower the note was. And then he said, aha, music obeys a mathematics, the mathematics of harmonies. And he was the first one to actually work out octaves, thirds, fifths, all the laws of music. And then he said, that is the theory of everything. Well, of course, nothing happened for the next 2,000 years. We had to slowly learn the laws of chemistry and the laws of physics. But now we have a new theory, string theory, which is what I do for a living. And who knows? It's so controversial, by the way, that Nobel Prize winners have split on the question of whether this is the theory that eluded Einstein in the last 30 years of his life. You know, the equation E equals mc squared, that's only half an inch long. E being energy, m being the mass of a star, and that's the equation that drives the universe. The energy source of the universe comes from an equation half an inch long. But Einstein wasn't satisfied. He wanted an equation maybe 1 inch long that would summarize all the forces of the universe. Gravity, electromagnetism, and the two nuclear forces. We'll find out what all the controversy is about. The book is called The God Equation, The Quest for the Theory of Everything, available in your bookstore starting April 6th. But anyway, today we have with us Dr. Robert Zubrin. He's a pioneer in the sense that he was talking about going to Mars when nobody was talking about going to Mars. And we're celebrating the 25th anniversary of his book, The Case for Mars, The Plan to Settle the Red Planet and Why We Must. He's also the founder and president of the Mars Society, and he's also a working aerospace engineer, so he knows what he's talking about. So, Robert, glad you could be on Science Fantastic.
Thanks for inviting me.
Well, first question for you is, when you were a kid, when you were a youth, what was it that steered you in the direction of rocketry, space exploration, and eventually the planet Mars?
Well, the first thing was Sputnik. I was 5 when Sputnik flew, and it's actually the first, you know, noteworthy world event that I can remember, you know, actually experiencing in my lifetime. And I experienced the excitement over Sputnik. We could see it flying overhead. I read about Laika, the space dog, in our weekly reader, and I was all in. You know, the adults may have been terrified and meant the Russians could hit us, but for me, I was already a reader at the age of 5, and I was reading science fiction, and Sputnik exhilarated me. It said that these stories about space travel were going to be real, and I wanted to be part of it. And then when I was 9, Kennedy made the speech committing us to go to the moon. And I remember it was on TV in my fourth grade classroom. And wow. Okay, and of course I wasn't alone. The millions of young Americans at that time, mostly boys at that time, were absolutely thrilled to this. The moon program made science the great adventure. And as I think you know, the United States doubled the number of science graduates and engineering graduates that it had in the 60s because of the Apollo program. We've benefited from that intellectual capital ever since.
Okay, and then why did you settle on Mars as a target? It's so distant, it's so forbidding. Why did you settle on Mars?
Well, because in my reading, even as a kid, it rapidly became clear that Mars was two things. It was both the nearest place where we might discover extraterrestrial life and the nearest place where we might settle. So Mars was where the science is, and in Mars was where the future.
Okay, now among astronauts even, there's a debate as to whether or not we should first settle the moon, building a space station around the moon and a permanent settlement, and then launching off to Mars. Or some people say, well, we've been there, done that, why not simply jump to Mars directly? Do you have any personal thoughts about which strategy to pursue?
Well, I lean closer to the second, okay? Not completely, because I believe that the hardware that allows us to go to Mars will also give us the capability of doing expeditions to the moon. So I'm not saying we should not go to the moon. But, you know, there were people who said we had to have a space station before we went to the moon. And we didn't need a space station to go to the moon. We were able to launch a space station called Skylab using the same hardware that we used to go to the moon. So we did accomplish both objectives. But we didn't make the moon program dependent on a space station. You know, we didn't listen to these people who were saying, you can't do your program until you do my program. And that is how I feel about Mars today. We should make our goal Mars. Mars is where the science is, and it is where the future is. The moon is not. But certainly, if we can develop the spacefaring capabilities to go to Mars, we'll also pick up the moon as well.
Okay, well, 25 years ago, your book came out, The Case for Mars, The Plan to Settle the Red Planet and Why We Must. And the next question is, what changed? What changed in the last 25 years? And the first question is cost. How has cost changed, given the fact that in 1966, the Apollo space program consumed 5% of the U.S. federal budget? That would bankrupt the economy if we kept that up. But let's take a short commercial break. And after the break, we're going to continue discussion with Dr. Robert Zubrin, founder and president of the Mars Society, celebrating the 25th anniversary of his book, The Case for Mars. So stay tuned as we continue a discussion of exploring the red planet. Mars.
trading involves financial risk and is not suitable for all investors. Past results do not guarantee future performance.
As life in America looks to return to normal, how can you succeed in the new stock market? With the tech dip, volatility with interest rates, and fear around the yield curve, it's virtually impossible to guess what will happen next. With Vantage Point, you don't have to. Text the word money to 813-813 to find out how our technology can forecast market trends up to 3 days in advance with incredible accuracy. Text money to 813-813 to find explosive moves before they happen. Vantage Point's patented artificial intelligence can give you a massive edge. Text the word money to 813-813. Start predicting trends 72 hours in advance and maximize your gains. Text money to 813-813. Experience Vantage Point for free. Learn how successful traders generate their wealth. Don't wait. Text the word money to 813-813.
Go to VantagePointSoftware.com for terms, conditions, and privacy policy.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions, SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
Yes, the pandemic is coming to an end. Restrictions are coming to an end. But body aches and pains never seem to end. That's why you need to click sunny-bay.com for the best sleep you can get. Sunny Bay's legendary products can help, like our lavender stress-reducing products, locally sourced and handmade in the USA. Or try Sunny Bay's award-winning pillows for traveling or extra neck support while sleeping. No need for pills or expensive chiropractic visits. Our neck support pillows are that good. Sunny Bay is a homegrown small business, but our products are designed and rigorously tested based on your demand and feedback. And they make great gifts for mom, dad, or anyone. Find Sunny Bay products on Amazon, Walmart, Etsy, or at sunny-bay.com. And right now, get free heat patches and a belt with any purchase. So remember, Sunny Bay heating pads, neck pillows, and stress-relieving hot or cold wraps. As restrictions come to an end and you get back to work, do it the healthy way with Sunny Bay.
Are you afraid to go to the mailbox because of letter after letter from the IRS? Are they stacking on more and more penalties and interest? By now, you know the problem won't go away on its own. Don't let the IRS chase you to your grave with penalties and interest and liens and levies. You need real help now. I'm Dan Pilla. I wrote the book on tax debt settlement, and I help thousands of people solve tax problems they thought couldn't be solved. I can help you too. Call 800-34-NO-TAX or go to my website, danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com. danpilla.com.
Brought to you by Professor Michio Kaku. This is Science Fantastic.
Welcome back to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. Once again, our special guest today is Dr. Robert Zubrin, pioneer, founder, president of the Mars Society, author of a number of great books, and today we're celebrating the 25th anniversary of a pioneering book, The Case for Mars, the plan to settle the red planet, and why we must. So, Robert, the next question is, what has changed in the last 25 years? Let's say, first of all, politically and economically. Back in 1966, the Apollo space program consumed 5% of the U.S. federal budget. 5% of every dollar you gave to income tax went to the Apollo space program. That was unsustainable. And sure enough, the whole thing collapsed several years later. And a trip to Mars, of course, would be even more expensive. So what has happened, first of all, in terms of cost? The cost of rocketry, has it decreased? Do we have new ideas, new funding from Silicon Valley billionaires? What's different now than 25 years ago?
Okay. Well, just first of all, briefly, let me comment that while what you say is true, that in 1966, Apollo reached about 5% of the U.S. federal budget, if you take the total NASA budget from 61 through 73, that is the whole Apollo period, and you turn it into today's dollars and then divide it by 13 years, it comes out to $20 billion a year, which is the same as NASA's budget today. And that was sustained by a country with a GNP, something like one quarter of what we have today. So, in fact, Apollo wasn't that costly. We're actually paying Apollo-level space budgets today, but we have not accomplished anything like Apollo because we haven't had the focus of Apollo. The human spaceflight program during Apollo was very purpose-driven. Since the end of Apollo, without a clear objective, it's been largely vendor-driven. Okay, and it's been not spending money to do things, but doing things to spend money. The science program, on the other hand, with the rovers and such, has remained purpose-driven, and they've accomplished a great deal. But to answer your question, okay, costs are coming down now fast because of the entrepreneurial space revolution, which has been led by, but not entirely composed of, SpaceX, Elon Musk's company. You know, the cost of space launch remained the same from 1970 to 2010, $10,000 a kilogram. But since 2010, because of SpaceX bursting on the scene with mostly reusable rockets, the cost of space launch has dropped by a factor of five, from $10,000 a kilogram to $2,000 a kilogram. And as we speak, possibly today, there is going to be a test flight of a new, more advanced fully reusable launch vehicle that SpaceX called Starship, which, if this program is successful, will cut the cost of space launch by yet another factor of five, bring it down to more like $400 a kilogram. And this will radically improve the prospects for humans to Mars.
Now, some people also say that the question of vision is different now than it was 25 years ago. Back then, the vision was beat the Russians, beat the Russians. Well, we beat the Russians. We lost the vision, and the space program never went anywhere. NASA became, quote, the agency to nowhere. It, of course, went to the planets, which is great, but the manned exploration of the universe pretty much came to the halt. So do you think, therefore, that we're gradually entering a second era, a second era where costs are plunging, a new vision is coming out, entrepreneurs are opening up their checkbooks, a new era in space exploration? What are your thoughts?
I agree. I think that's exactly what's happening. And here's how I think this is going to come down. You know, they're doing test flights of the space of the Starship this week, and they're talking about reaching orbit with it sometime later this year. I think that might be optimistic. I think they'll probably reach orbit next year, but no matter. Okay. By 2024, Starships are going to be regularly flying to orbit. And whoever's elected president in 2024, looking at that and saying, look at this thing. They're flying to orbit with 100-ton payloads, same as a Saturn V, but 1% the cost, because it's reusable. And he wants to send humans to Mars. If we work with this guy, can we send humans to Mars before the end of my second term? And the answer is going to be yes. And they're going to say, well, is it going to cost $1 trillion? No. Is it going to cost $100 billion? No. We could probably do this within NASA's existing budget. But he's already developed the most expensive part. We just need to develop the other parts, the Mars spacesuits, the Mars power systems, the propellant-making systems, all these other things that need to be done. Okay, if we work together with him, public-private partnership, yeah, we can have people on Mars by 2030. And I think that's what will happen. This thing's going to come together. By making humans to Mars feasible financially, Musk is going to make it sellable. And then I think, you know, people just, they won't be discouraged. They'll say, if we can do this, I want to do it.
Now, another difference now than what happened 25 years ago is the question of vision. We have Elon Musk with a vision that we should become a two-planet species or multi-planet species, because after all, the dinosaurs did not have a space program, and that's why they're not here today. And Jeff Bezos, richest man in the world, has a vision. He wants to create the Earth as a celestial park. That is, all the heavy polluting industry would be put into outer space. And so the Earth would become a celestial jewel floating in the heavens. So you think, therefore, that new visions are coming out, other than beating the Russians, a new vision for space exploration? What are your thoughts?
Well, sure. Now, I, of course, lean much more towards Musk's vision, because I really don't think it's possible to take the steel industry and move it off of Earth and be transporting iron ore to orbit, melting it there and bringing it back. So I don't think that's realistic. But what I do think is that by creating new branches of human civilization in space, such as, for example, on Mars, we're creating new creative members, new creative nations in the human family that will benefit humans everywhere, just as, for instance, the creation of America as an inventive culture, which, in you know, both pioneered democracy but invented electricity and aeroplanes and nuclear power and the internet. You know, we've made enormous contributions. And so new nations, new contributions, new sources of creativity that will help us solve all our problems, both on Earth and in space.
Okay, now some people look at history and they say that the pioneers that settled into the Americas were able to, quote, live off the land. They were able to mine the soil. They were able to hunt animals. They could breathe the same air as they breathed in England. And they could live off the land. But Mars is a whole other ball of wax. You can't breathe a carbon dioxide atmosphere. It's cold on Mars. There's no vegetation that you can plant. So what are your thoughts about, quote, living off the land? Is that practical or is that just a pipe dream?
No, that's entirely practical, and it's what we must do. The question of whether an environment is habitable is really about you, whether you have the tools, the creativity to turn the materials there into resources. There's no such thing as a natural resource. It's only natural raw materials. It's human creativity that turns materials into resources. And, you know, humans are not really native to the Earth. We're native to Kenya. I mean, we are tropical animals. We have no fur on our arms. Humans in the true state of nature couldn't live in Europe or Asia or most of Asia or North America. They would freeze to death. They had to invent technology like fire and clothing and houses and the ability to acquire food in the wintertime. So, you know, and then if you talk about the pilgrims coming to America, they had a real rough time. This place was no walk in the park. Half the pilgrims died in their first winter in New England. They were not prepared for that environment, but they developed the technologies. And, you know, the place where I live, Colorado, the first pioneers just passed through here. They said, this is a desert. No one could possibly live in Colorado. And they went straight from, you know, Illinois to Oregon or California. And this was uninhabitable, but it became habitable. And similarly, we need to develop the technologies that allow us to turn Martian materials into resources, to turn, for instance, Martian CO2 and water into fuels and into food and fabrics, okay, to reduce Martian iron oxide to make steel, you know, to make all these things that we use, glass, ceramics, plastics. You know, if we can do that, then Mars becomes a place that humans can settle.
Okay, now the big ball of wax is a question of terraforming, and we'll talk about that after the break. Once again, our special guest today is Dr. Robert Zubrin, founder and president of the Mars Society, and we are celebrating the 25th anniversary of his pioneering book, The Case for Mars. And you are listening to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. If you want to get on the air, if you want to get on 100 radio stations that carry Science Fantastic, give us a call. The hotline number is 612-564-8135. Leave your name, call letters to the radio station or website, and the city you're calling from, and bingo, maybe you can get on national radio on Science Fantastic.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
USA Radio News with Wendy King.
A judge in Minneapolis has sentenced former police officer Derek Chauvin, who was convicted of killing George Floyd, to 22 and a half years in prison.
Like the conviction of Derek Chauvin 2 months ago, today's sentencing is not justice, but it is another moment of real accountability on the road to justice.
Minnesota Attorney General Keith Ellison. Derek Chauvin's mother, Carolyn, made an impact statement. She told the court her son is not a racist.
None of these things are true, and that my son is a good man.
President Biden has signed a law designating the site of the Pulse nightclub shooting in Orlando, Florida, as a national memorial. He signed the legislation during a White House ceremony flanked by lawmakers, survivors of the shooting, and LGBTQ leaders. This is USA Radio News. The death toll from the collapse of an oceanfront condominium tower near Miami Beach rose to 4, with about 159 people unaccounted for as crews continued to search the debris for survivors. Miami-Dade County Mayor Daniela Levine Cava said about 120 people had been accounted for, but stressed that the numbers remain fluid. Authorities said at least 4 died in the sudden collapse of the 12-story Champlain Towers in Surfside. President Biden approved an emergency declaration that will provide federal aid to the area. The Homeland Security Department and Federal Emergency Management Agency, or FEMA, are authorized to help coordinate disaster relief efforts with local officials. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis issued a state of emergency for Miami-Dade County. Surfside Mayor Charles Burkett said he hopes for more than just fiscal assistance and manpower. Authorities are looking into the cause of the collapse, which sent half of the tower crashing to the ground in just seconds. This is USA Radio News.
We have all seen and perhaps used the alcohol-based hand sanitizers. Have you ever noticed how it dries your skin, and as soon as the alcohol evaporates, it's no longer effective? With bacteria and virus problems, sanitizers and hand washing are the first line of defense against infectious disease. GCNteam.com has alcohol-free antibacterial soap and foam, meeting or exceeding all requirements as set forth by the United States Food and Drug Administration as a first aid antiseptic. When it comes to sanitizers, it only makes sense that it lasts till the next application and doesn't dry and crack your skin, inviting infection. For long-lasting alcohol-free sanitizing, come to GCNteam.com keyword antibacterial. That's GCNteam.com, antibacterial, or call 877-878-4203.
These are the sounds of someone taking their eyes off the road. Texting while driving is more than distracting. It's dangerous. Do yourself a favor. Do us all a favor. When you're on the road, stay off the phone. A message from CTIA.
Science Fantastic.
Welcome back to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. Once again, our special guest today is Dr. Robert Zubrin, president and founder of the Mars Society. We're celebrating the 25th anniversary of the publication of his pioneering book, The Case for Mars. And once again, starting next week, I have my new book coming out. It's called The God Equation, The Quest for the Theory of Everything. Is there an equation, perhaps no more than 1 inch long, that summarizes all the physical laws of the universe? Now, you may say to yourself, so what? So what if we get the theory of everything? What can you do with it? Well, you can answer some of the deepest questions of the universe. Is time travel possible? Are there gateways to other universes, wormholes? Is it possible to go before the Big Bang? What's on the other side of a black hole? Are there other dimensions? Are there other universes? None of these questions can be answered within the framework of Einstein's theory. To answer these questions, you have to have a quantum theory of gravity, and that's where the theory of everything comes in. It's a theory that combines relativity with the quantum theory. So far, the leading theory is called string theory, which is what I do for a living. That doesn't mean it's correct. In fact, there's a debate that has split Nobel Prize-winning physicists head-to-head debating whether or not string theory really is the fabled theory of everything. If string theory is correct, however, it does mean that all the subatomic particles are nothing but musical notes on tiny, tiny strings, that physics is nothing but the harmonies of these strings. Chemistry is the melodies you can play on these vibrating strings. The universe is a symphony of strings, and the mind of God that Albert Einstein wrote about eloquently for the last 30 years of his life, the mind of God would be cosmic music resonating through 11-dimensional hyperspace. That would be the mind of God. Anyway, let's get back to Earth, or Mars, and our special guest today, once again, is Dr. Robert Zubrin. We're celebrating the 25th anniversary of the publication of his pioneering book, The Case for Mars. Now, let me ask you a question about terraforming. That is, making Mars into more of an Earth-like environment. Elon Musk played with the idea of detonating hydrogen bombs on the polar ice caps. However, what about using solar satellites to beam energy down to the poles of Mars? Mars has plenty of water, but it's all frozen, to melt the ice caps so that water runs freely on Mars for the first time in about 3 billion years. What are your thoughts?
Well, I don't think that the hydrogen bomb method is viable, and the other method has some use, but I think if you want to warm Mars, well, we know how to do it, because we're doing it right now on Earth, which is you use greenhouse gases. Now, of course, we're greenhousing the Earth by accident as a byproduct of our industrial activities. And we've raised the temperature of the Earth 1 degree centigrade since about 1870 as a result of industry. And this is not desirable, and certainly would be undesirable if it was to go a lot further. But Mars is different. Mars needs to be warmed up. And if we wanted to warm Mars on purpose, not by accident, there are more effective ways that we can greenhouse a planet than with industrial exhaust. There are designer chemicals like, for instance, a carbon tetrafluoride, CF4, which is thousands of times more effective as a greenhouse gas than CO2. And if we were to set up factories on Mars to manufacture that gas and similar gases and release them into the atmosphere to greenhouse the planet on purpose, we could raise Mars by...
We have to take a short commercial break, but after the break, we're going to continue a discussion of the case for Mars with Dr. Robert Zubrin, president and founder of the Mars Society. And if you want to get on Science Fantastic and ask your question on 100 radio stations, give us a call at 612-564-8135. Leave your name, call letters in the radio station or website, and the city you're calling from, and you can get on national radio. Give us a call.
Anytime, any place, anywhere, radio remains the most intimate of all forms of media. At home, at work, in the car, on smartphones. Over 90% of consumers still listen to radio every week. That makes choosing radio as a place to advertise your business one of the best decisions you can make. Email advertise@gcnlive.com and partner up with an experienced GCN representative. Advertise@gcnlive.com. Easy, affordable, effective.
If you feel America is facing more dangers than ever, you're right. Things are falling apart, it seems, every day. That's why you need to prepare for more of the unexpected, especially food shortages. When people panic, grocery stores run out of food fast. Would you survive without food for days, weeks, even months? The smart folks are buying emergency food now. Take a moment to shop MyPatriotSupply.com. We're America's leader in preparedness. With over a dozen years' experience, My Patriot Supply has earned over 40,000 four-star and five-star reviews. Our delicious, calorie-rich food averages 2,000 calories per day and lasts in storage up to 25 years, so it's there when you need it. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com, order a kit or two, and we'll ship quickly and discreetly to your door. Don't wait for something bad to happen again. Rather, be more self-reliant and prepared. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions. SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
Hey everybody, if you've ever thought about heirloom beans as a storable survival food, I've got great news. In fact, I'll bet it's the best news you've heard in a while. Here's the thing, we've just received a fresh batch of gourmet heirloom beans, survival soup beans. These beans are gorgeous, highly nutritious, and above all, with no hesitation whatsoever, the best tasting beans in the entire world. The best part? We've dropped the price by 33% this week for listeners who know higher food prices are coming and want an inflation hedge you can actually eat if you want to. It gets even better. With your permission and with a high regard for your health and well-being, I also want to send you 2 pounds of what we think is the single most underrated superfood in the world, period. Go to soupbeansurvival.com, that's soupbeansurvival.com, and discover the real reason we're giving this unusual superfood away at soupbeansurvival.com, that's soupbeansurvival.com.
Brought to you by Professor Michio Kaku. This is Science Fantastic.
Welcome back to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. We're very proud to have with us today Dr. Robert Zubrin, aerospace engineer, author, media personality, and we're celebrating the 25th anniversary of the publication of his book, The Case for Mars. You know, 25 years ago, he was like a voice in the wilderness, but now things have changed. The cost of space travel has dropped with the coming of reusable rockets and SpaceX. Silicon Valley billionaires are opening their checkbooks. New vision is now entering the space program other than simply beat the Russians. And so we're talking about perhaps a second era, a new second era in space exploration. But now let's talk about Mars, whether it's possible to terraform Mars, turn it into an Earth-like environment. Some people say it will take centuries to do that. Other people think that, no, perhaps within a lifetime. But what are your thoughts about how practical a program would be to make Mars more Earth-like? What are your thoughts?
Well, first of all, I think the people who are going to terraform Mars are going to be the Martians. In other words, the people who settle Mars, they're the ones who are going to have enough interest in improving the planet and making it more fertile that they'll be willing to expend the effort, because it's going to be a big job. But as I was saying, by producing artificial greenhouse gases, we could raise Mars 10 degrees centigrade within 50 years, so far more effectively than we're currently doing by accident on Earth. And if you were to do that, then Mars has got lots of water. We've discovered glaciers on Mars as far south as 38 degrees north, which is the same as the latitude of San Francisco. And these glaciers contain as much water as the American Great Lakes. And there's undoubtedly more of them to be discovered. And they'll start to melt, and water will flow, and the dry rivers of Mars will be flowing again. The dry lakes will fill up, and there'll be rain. And also the CO2 atmosphere will thicken because CO2 will outgas from the soil as Mars warms. That will warm Mars even more, possibly as much as 50 degrees. And at that point, you've got a warm, wet Mars, and you can start spreading seeds. Now, if we were spreading seeds using the same kind of plants we have now, it would take 1,000 years for them to put enough oxygen in Mars's atmosphere for you to breathe it. But if we're talking about something going on 100 years from now, I think we're going to have genetic engineering, and we're going to have plants that are not 1% efficient at photosynthesis, which is what they currently are, but we might have 10% efficient, in which case this could greatly be speeded up. And so I think Mars will be terraformed within about 200 years, but the people who will do it will be the Martians. And that's another reason why it's not going to be done with hydrogen bombs. The Martians are going to want to improve Mars. They're not going to want to radioactivate it.
Okay, now let's talk about, well, what's happening today. We had the Perseverance space probe that launched a helicopter on Mars, the first helicopter to land on another planet, and we'll test it very soon. And rock retrieval is on the agenda. And some people think that rock retrieval is a dress rehearsal for human retrieval, that is, the basic steps of bringing rocks back to Earth is the same as bringing astronauts back to Earth. But what are your thoughts about the Perseverance space probe and how far we've come and how far we have yet to go with the current space program?
Well, the Perseverance is a great mission. And actually, the three things that excite me most about it is not the rock retrieval, but yes, the helicopter. Once we have helicopters on Mars, and this is just a small test one, if this works, we'll be followed by much bigger ones. You know, the rovers travel 200 meters in a day. A helicopter can travel 200 meters in a minute and 200 miles in a day. So this is going to increase our capability of exploration a thousandfold, okay, if this thing succeeds. So this is terrific. A second thing is there's an experiment on Perseverance in making oxygen out of the Martian atmosphere, and oxygen is the majority of rocket fuel. So, you know, I've been a very strong advocate that we need to make our return propellant on Mars if we're going to send humans to Mars. The Perseverance mission will open up that possibility. And the third is its fossil hunting equipment, its microscope. It's going to have a chance of looking for fossils of past life on Mars. And I think if it finds it, that will be a tremendous incentive to send humans there to go and set up drills and try to reach the groundwater. Because if there ever was life on the surface of Mars, it probably still exists underground in subsurface water. And if we can send people there, we could drill, we could bring it up, and we could see if it uses the same RNA, DNA information system that is the basis of all life on Earth, or whether it uses something entirely different. In other words, we'd be able to find out whether life as we know it on Earth is what life is, or we're just one small part of a vastly greater tapestry of possibilities. This is huge. This is something people have wondered about for thousands of years.
Okay, let's take another short commercial break. Once again, you are listening to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. Our special guest today is Dr. Robert Zubrin, founder of the Mars Society, and we're celebrating the 25th anniversary of the publication of his pioneering book, The Case for Mars. So stay tuned for the next segment of Science Fantastic, and give us a call at 612-564-8135.
Hi, I'm Dr. Joel Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy. There's no reason why you shouldn't live to be at least 100 and have a great time getting there. And I'm going to give you a free copy of my lecture that tells you exactly how to do it. In fact, after you've lived a long and healthy life, there should be only two documents in your medical chart, a birth certificate and a death certificate. I'm Dr. Wallach with a warning. If you have a 4-inch medical chart, if you take prescription drugs for high cholesterol, high blood pressure, arthritis, joint pains, and other health issues, the medical profession is failing you. They're using you for an ATM machine. My free lecture is going to reveal what pharmaceutical companies don't want you to know. There's been groundbreaking research and discoveries on how to effectively treat or eliminate over 900 different diseases naturally, and it's all in my free lecture called Deadly Recipe. So call toll-free 1-855-79-YOUNG. Again, that's toll-free 1-855-79-YOUNG. 1-855-79-YOUNG.
Complement your health with hemp-derived cannabinoid oil. We've always believed that the closer to Earth, the better it is for our bodies. Our hemp-derived cannabinoid oil is phytocannabinoid-rich, full-spectrum, and organically grown. Finally, hemp made easy, clean, and effective. GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203. That's right, we cut through the red tape. It's now available at GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203.
Stop aging now. Restore those joints. Boost your strength. Because it's official. NutraMedical has released the most exciting, powerful anti-aging supplement on the market. Dr. Bill Deagle's Red Deer Velvet DR has been approved by the U.S. Patent Office. Imagine stem cell rejuvenation all in one capsule without huge expense. Dr. Bill MD discovered that as an unborn baby grows in the mother's womb, he or she does not deteriorate or physically age. Red Deer Velvet DR, like the uterus, provides 300 biomolecules and 6 hormones protected in one special DR capsule that delivers lipid packages directly into your circulation. This patented technology bypasses the stomach and is released into the small bowel unaltered by digestive enzymes and stomach acid. Remember, Red Deer Velvet DR. Improve endurance, stimulate your immune system, increase learning ability, and even improve sexual libido with Red Deer Velvet DR. Click NutriMedical.com. That's N-U-T-R-I Medical.com. Or call toll-free 888-212-8871 and get on the road to a newer, rejuvenated, happier you.
Do you want to give you and your loved ones premium nutrition right now? Hi, I'm Jamel Bookaboo from TeamG'day.com and the GCN Longevity Health Team. Get your premium nutrition formulated by world-renowned naturopathic doctor, Dr. Joel Wallach at wholesale, or also become a distributor and earn income while supporting this broadcast. Go to TeamG'day.com via the shopping cart or contact form, and I'll get back to you with support personally. That's TeamG'day.com with Longevity. TeamG'day.com.
This is Science Fantastic.
Welcome back to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. Once again, our special guest today is Dr. Robert Zubrin, aerospace engineer, author, media personality, and we're celebrating the 25th anniversary of the publication of his book, The Case for Mars. Well, Robert, let's say we have a colony on Mars that lives there. The gravity of Mars is roughly one-third the gravity on the planet Earth. Some people think that a citizen of Mars would have a hard time going back to the Earth where the gravitational field is much stronger, and therefore perhaps a new branch of the human race will start to evolve on Mars, separate from the branch on the Earth. What are your thoughts?
Well, I think that'll happen. I think that, and as we go into space, we'll have numerous new branches of the human species with higher gravity planets, lower gravity planets, and certainly new cultures. Humanity is going to become more diverse. But listen, I know we're coming close to the end. I'd like to talk about something that I want to talk about what I think our next step should be for Mars. And I think what NASA should focus on at this point to enable human Mars exploration is something very simple, which is to develop a 10-ton Mars lander, that is, 10-ton payload capability. Perseverance, Curiosity, those used 1-ton landing systems. To enable human exploration, we need to go to 10 tons. Now, this is something we can do. If you can land 1 ton, you can land 10. It's just engineering. But once we have this, instead of sending one robot to Mars at a time, we can send a platoon. And these can include big science robots like Perseverance, but also a lot of smaller robots containing high-definition cameras. They can go out, they can fan out, they can photograph a whole region around the landing site in detail and send it back to Earth and make it a virtual reality landscape that people here can explore, and if they find things, call them to the attention of science rovers to go and check out. We can send large helicopters, and we can send construction robots, perhaps humanoid in form, like, you know, these robots from Boston Robotics that can walk around and build a base, set it up, set up the power system, set up the propellant-making system, build the whole place. And so enormously powerful science mission that literally builds the base. So then when it's time to send the astronauts, they don't have to bring everything. All they got to do is bring a credit card and check in. And this is the next step. This is something we can do. This is something Joe Biden can do that will radically expand our scientific exploration on Mars with robots and prepare the way for humans in the very near future, and also open up Mars exploration to participation by millions of people.
Okay, well, could you give us a rough time frame of when this might be possible and, of course, cost? How much more of the NASA budget are we going to strain to fund all this? So give us a concrete roadmap of your thoughts.
Well, I think to create a heavy Mars lander is something we could do in 4 or 5 years. And it would probably cost a couple of $1 billion a year, 10% of NASA's budget. And I think that's, for instance, much more productive than, for instance, this project they have of building a space station in orbit around the moon, which frankly has no purpose at all. You don't need a space station in orbit around the moon to go to the moon, and you certainly don't need to go to Mars. This would be something that is very purpose-driven. It would fit right in with accelerating the very successful robotic Mars program, and it would be a direct step on the way to Mars, because with a 10-ton lander and with your fuel already made for you on the Martian surface, you could land astronauts on Mars in an ascent vehicle that can refuel itself and fly back to orbit. So, you know, we don't need, you know, people think, oh, to go to Mars, we're going to need giant nuclear-powered interplanetary spaceships like Battlestar Galactica. We don't need that. What we need is a system that can deliver a package to Mars capable of delivering a small group of people to the surface, and either that or a comparable system to take them back up again. And so this is the next step. We don't need to be very futuristic about this. This is simply a way we can, you know, increase our effectiveness of our robotic program, of our science exploration of Mars by orders of magnitude. At the same time, it leads directly to humans. So I think this is what Biden should do. I hope that Bill Nelson, the new NASA administrator, will embrace this idea, because this would be a huge breakthrough.
And you mentioned the moon, right? Some people have said that the moon has no commercial value because, well, the soil content, mineral content is pretty much identical to that of the Earth. So there's no benefit to mining the moon. And it has no military value because it takes 3 days to go to the moon. A nuclear war would be fought within a matter of hours, not 3 days. So it has very little strategic or military value, very little commercial value. And you can't grow anything there. You can't mine anything. So some people think that, well, maybe it's a dead end, that money that could be spent on Mars is going to be spent on creating a permanent presence on the moon when it serves no purpose. But, well, what are your thoughts?
Well, I think there's limited purpose. I think it might be interesting to set up radio telescopes on the lunar far side, for example. I think there's some stuff you can do on the moon, but certainly I don't think it should be our central priority. And we certainly don't want to have a moon program that says to Mars, you can't do your program until you do my program. That would be harmful. We have a good Mars program. We'll develop spacefaring capabilities that will allow us to do the moon. And also, I must say, do many other very exciting things, such as launch giant space telescopes that might help get the answers to whether your theories are correct, because there's no better lab than the universe. Okay, there's no bigger one. There's no one that disposes of higher energy processes and more unusual conditions. You know, a lot of our knowledge of physics has come from astronomy, and by becoming a spacefaring species, which we will do in the process of exploring and settling Mars, we'll gain the capability of doing science in space on a huge scale. It's going to be terrific.
Now, I hate to be a party pooper, but some people have pointed out that, well, space is radioactive, but we're running out of time. So, quick question. Is radiation a deal breaker, or can we deal with radiation in space and on Mars? 15 seconds for the answer.
We certainly can. The radiation dose on the surface of Mars is the same as that at the space station, but we can also build shielded habitats on the surface of Mars. I've seen designs that put water over the roofs of the habitat, so you can watch the fish farms above you, which also shield you and lets the light come in. There's all sorts of interesting aesthetics to this.
Okay, Robert, thank you so much. Once again, our guest is Robert Zubrin, author and president and founder of the Mars Society, and we're celebrating the 25th anniversary of his book, The Case for Mars. This is Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. Go to my website, mkaku.org, mkaku.org.
Jake was in big trouble with the IRS. He owed how much?
$92,000.
Ouch. The IRS left no room for Jake to breathe.
They put a lien on my house, took all the money out of my bank account, took money out of my paychecks. So it was a nightmare.
He needed help fast.
I figured that all these companies were the same until I called Federal Tax Management. You could just tell they knew what they were talking about. Right then and there, I felt like I had some hope.
Stop the liens, levies, and garnishments fast and qualify for one of several special IRS programs that could reduce or even eliminate your tax debt. So, how'd it go for Jake?
They did what they said they would do. They came through for me. I ended up saving an unbelievable amount. I was so jazzed. I was extremely happy.
If you owe more than $10,000 in back taxes, take Jake's advice.
Give Federal Tax Management a phone call. If they help me, they can help anybody.
Call the Federal Tax Management Hotline now. 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625.